We humans are pretty amazing creatures, and we have many great and wonderful skills. Unfortunately, one of the best skills we tend to have is the ability to judge others. We are quite good at it. If we were not, Jesus would not have had to have told us, "Judge not, lest you be judged yourself." We judge on so many different levels. We judge according to your looks. We judge according to your body shape. We judge according to your interest. We judge according to your language. We judge according to your occupation. And almost always when we judge, when we exercise those highly honed judging skills, we use ourselves as the baseline for what is normal and proper and right. As long as you're like me, you're okay. But problems start when you become a little bit less like me. If I'm politically conservative and you're one of those liberals, ooh, yeah, well, okay. If I live in River Hills and you live in Mequon, ooh. And if I live in Mequon and you live in Cedarburg, ooh. And if I live in Cedarburg and you live in Grafton, ew, you know how it goes, right? You get the picture. We have refined and defined the art of judging in so many ways. We judge by where you might go to school, where you might shop, what you eat, what you drink, what you wear, for whom you root, and always, always where I go to school, where I shop, where I eat, what I drink, what I wear, for whom I root, that's the right choice. Because why? Because my choices are wonderful. Because, hello, look at me, right? That's the way we are. Now, we know that judging others is wrong. Well, at least when others are judging, we know it's wrong. But then again, others have a very skewed view of that, don't they? But judging is nothing new. Like I said, if judging were something new, Jesus would not have needed to say 2,000 years ago, "Judge not, lest ye be judged yourself." Because, you see, Jesus was the victim of being judged in many, many ways. In our gospel story for today, from John chapter 1, Jesus has just been baptized by John at the Jordan River. He's beginning his ministry, and he begins his ministry by rounding up his first disciples. He finds Philip, who happens to be from the same town as the fishermen, Peter, and Andrew, and he says to him, "Follow me." And then Philip goes and finds his friend Nathanael, and he declares, and here's the quote from the gospel, "We have found him about whom Moses and the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus, son of Joseph from Nazareth." And Nathanael's response was not, "Whoa, you mean you found the Messiah? This is amazing. Where do I sign up to follow him?" That's not what Nathanael says. Nathanael's response is, "Can anything come from Nazareth?" He's from Nazareth? Ew, I'm not so sure about it. I mean, Nazareth, it's a kind of two-donkey town in the middle of nowhere. How could anyone of importance come from Nazareth? And this would not be the last time that Jesus would be judged. He was judged because people said he was a drunkard because he liked to go to a lot of dinner parties. Questions were raised about the legitimacy of his birth. His enemies, and he had a lot of enemies, claimed that he was possessed by the power of Satan. Rumors were spread about his mental well-being, and they were not positive rumors. In fact, there's actually a story in Mark's gospel where his own family comes to haul him home and lock him up because people are saying he's nuts. He was looked down upon and judged because he hung out with the wrong kind of people. He hung out with sinners, with prostitutes, with children, with foreigners, with tax collectors. Hardly the kind of people with whom you would associate if you were a holy and a righteous man. Right, folks? Huh? And then there were the vicious accusations that followed him all the way to the cross. As he hangs on the cross, his enemies mock him and judge him for saying that he was the king of the Jews. To so many people, Jesus simply could not possibly be the Messiah. And he deserved to be judged, to be mocked, and to be ridiculed because he didn't fit the part. He was not famous. He didn't have a royal background. He was not educated. He was not wealthy. He did not come from Jerusalem or from the places the important people come from. He came from obscurity. He came from nothing. How could he be the one? So many people were thrilled to judge him and say, "Good riddance, Jesus. You got what you deserved." But God had another take on this judgment thing. And folks, in the final analysis, God's opinion is really the only one that counts. And that's why the empty tomb of Easter is so important for the story of Jesus. Because in that empty tomb, on that day, God changed everything with his final and divine judgment. That was the day when God declared that Jesus really was the one that Philip declared, the one about whom Moses and the law and also the prophets wrote. That's the day when God declared those words that Nathanael uttered later, that you are the Son of God, you are the King of Israel, to be true. In a world where we are so good at judging, by our own self-righteous standards, God has an entirely different way of doing things. And for us to catch on, and here's the important part, we need to open our ears and we need to open our eyes to see how God acts. And if we don't, we're going to miss a whole lot of important stuff. Now, there's a second part to my message today, and that's this. There is another important arena where you and I need to make sure that our ears are open and our eyes are open so we catch on to what God is trying to do. And that involves God calling us. God calling us, you and me, to his service. Because so many people, when they hear that, "God's calling me," their response is, "Sorry, wrong number, nobody home." We don't think God can or would possibly want to use you and me in his service. That is silly, especially in the light of how good we are at judging others, that we would say, "God can't possibly use me." But it happens so often, folks. Some people, and Christians especially, they can dismiss the notion that God wants to use them. They can step back and ignore it. They can say, "Well, maybe God can use someone else. He'll still get it done even if I'm not there to help out." But such actions are as equally foolish as judging others. Because you see, God has the delightful, irritating habit of calling and choosing the most unlikely people to do his amazing work. In our lesson for today, in a time when the word of the Lord was rare in the land of Israel, to whom does God choose to speak? A little boy. A little boy who's serving in the temple but doesn't know that the Lord is even there. He's not familiar with the Lord. He is the one who keeps calling and calling and calling Samuel, excuse me, in the middle of the night, until finally Eli the priest says, "Son, when you hear the voice, you need to say, 'Speak, for your servant is listening.'" And that's exactly what Samuel did the next time he heard the voice. And for the rest of his life, he served the Lord. The Bible makes it very clear that God is not your typical HR department head. God picks the most unlikely, bizarre, unusual choices to do his work. And God seems to take delight in doing this. When God decides that he needs a nation to be his, who does he call to be the ancestors of the nation? He calls an elderly man and an elderly woman who have no children. And he says, "You're the ones on whom I will build my great nation." When God needs someone to go to Pharaoh and say, "Let my people go," who does he choose? Well, someone who has run away from Pharaoh, someone who is in hiding, someone who doesn't like public speaking. "Moses, the job is yours." When God needs a bold and dynamic king to defeat the Philistines, who does he pick? That teenager over there that everyone else overlooked. "David, the crown is yours." When God needs a dynamic prophet to proclaim his word to his sinful people, who does he choose? How about a teenager? A teenager named Jeremiah who doesn't want the job, who hates the job, and who spends his life complaining about doing the job, but who does the job. God says, "I think I'll interrupt the ordinary life of teenage Mary and tell her she's going to be the mother of the Messiah." And Jesus, I hear you are looking for disciples. Who are you going to choose? I think I'll pick those arguing fishermen over there. They'll do just fine. When the Lord needed someone to be the greatest servant of Jesus Christ in all of history, it made perfect sense for the Lord to choose Saul of Tarsus, a man who not only hated Jesus with a white-hot passion, but a man who had dedicated his life to destroying the church of Jesus. Who could possibly be better for the job? That's how God acts, folks. It makes no sense to us, but that's okay because it makes sense to God, and God accomplishes his will. Again and again, that's how God works. Now, having said that, let me say this. God is calling you. God is calling me. He is calling us to serve him. Maybe to you, the call is loud and clear. Maybe you're a little distracted right now, like Samuel, and you're not picking up on the message. Or maybe you're walking through life when God's calling, you're going, na 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 na, and you don't want to hear it at all. Well, God says, you know what? Be quiet, take the fingers out of your ear, and listen. Because you're missing something important. We know we're not supposed to judge. That's God's business. But one of the ways in which God has judged is he has judged you and me worthy of serving him. And we need to hear that. In big ways and in little ways, God is calling us to serve him. Maybe God is calling you to change the world. Or maybe God is calling you to change part of the life of one person in that world. But we all need to be open to that call. That's the message of the scriptures to us today. It's as old as Samuel in the temple. It's as old as Nathanael wondering if anything good could possibly come out of Nazareth. It's as new as how God can and use you right here today to do his work in some way, to reach out and touch others with the good news of Jesus Christ. Speak, for your servant is listening, said young Samuel. We need to say the same thing. Follow me, Jesus said to Peter, to Andrew, to Philip, and to Nathanael. Follow me, Jesus says to you and to me. And we need to respond, okay, Lord, where do you want to lead me? I'm all ears. At this time in our service, we are pleased to welcome some of our new brothers and sisters who are joining our congregation. They finished their new members' classes this week. And I invite the new members who are here at this service to please come and to stand down here and to face the congregation. We have others.